the block of pain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. It's the second half of the financial afternoon power. Oh, I was going to say power hour, but power hour times two. That's what it is right here every Monday, WWPR. Talking markets at 4 o'clock with Mark and Andrew, then Henry Rain Show right after that. All markets, and then we get down to the weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, talk, and more. What about this week? Goldman Sachs gives a bullish. That's right, I said bullish.
No, that's not good.
Don't think I mispronounced the word. A bullish forecast for Bitcoin price. Short-term target. I wish I had a drum roll. There we go. Almost like a pro. I'm talking about the producing part of this. 13,000.
What?
$971 is what whoever writes this stuff for Goldman Sachs says. And I think he's got to be right, or she's got to be right.
13,971.
Yes. That five. So let's see. If it was to the third digit, they would be up right plus or minus 1%, say. And this is to the tenth. This is plus or minus 0.01%. They called that number. So it is right in my book because it's higher than my cost basis. The People's Bank of China, PBOC, like the insiders call it, has claimed that its digital currency, that's right, its digital currency.
Well, they have a digital currency now.
Quote, can now be said to be ready.
Can you now be said to be ready?
Yes. That's,
well, the yuan's being devalued every day, so I guess they got to have something new.
Some people say that about our radio show. You could say that it's ready. The United States Federal Reserve Board, not to be caught off guard by the PBOC, is planning to release a real-time payments and settlement service. I think they're buying Visa.
Yeah. Or MasterCard.
Coinbase has described how it was targeted by Enfold. Oh, gosh. This is one of those days. Everybody's back to school, and I need to go back to learn how to talk. And foiled a, you know, I blame it on my glasses, but I can see it's F-O-I-L right here. But it could have been an F-O-L-E-D, and they gave birth to a cult. But they didn't. But they foiled a sophisticated, highly targeted, thought-out attack, which
failed.
I guess is good for all of us. I feel semi-expert now. Let me do the proper introduction here as we start this conversation. And, of course, that is my attempt to ingrain and brand the theme music from Talking Markets from the 4 o'clock hour along with Andy here, who goes by Andrew there. But, yes, I feel semi-empowered to talk about the Coinbase attempted hack because I just got done passing the cybersecurity course. At SCF.
Oh, that's great.
I haven't gotten any kind of professional certification, but I can say the words now.
Oh, there we go.
As long as they don't put fold in the quote I'm trying to say. But I'm going to digress right now, because before we get into the actual news stories, I said, I think this at least will entertain the two of us, if nobody else. All right. So have you seen... This wasn't actually a topic in the course, but it would correspond news-wise to why I was in the course. Did you see all the ransomware hacks that are going on around the U.S. of municipal governments that have been hacked?
I've seen it. Yes. And, I've seen a few of them in the news. Yes.
Baltimore.
Yes.
I think Boston was the other one. Baltimore refused to pay a few hundred thousand dollar ransom and instead decided to pay $18 million to restore their system.
The democratic logic.
Well, it goes around.
Boston, Baltimore, what other ones?
It's getting into the scores of cities now.
Oh, okay.
Because what happened is their first targets were hospitals. Because, and I'm saying as though it's just one person doing it, but the you know, criminals talk. You know it's an easy target. So they originally targeted hospitals and healthcare because they figured they would pay more because the fines are bigger if you know.
The HIPAA rules and all that.
Yeah, if you disclose healthcare information. And so that worked a few times, but what they found out is that the for-profit places like hospitals and health insurance companies will reinvest to prevent it, and they harden their systems up. So they are like, where are we going to go after next? And
Clinton's email server?
Was there any profit in that?
Yeah, no, not really.
No, you got to have some place where you can make some money.
Yeah, so now they're hitting all these...
But the
government agencies.
Yes, and it's not even bad management per se, although that's some
It's horrible management.
I'm getting to the bad management, but I'm getting about the easy target part first.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these municipal governments, you know, they've had computers since the 80s, and they cobble together these systems. And nobody really knows how to oversee them. You know, you're now 30, 40 years past. And they, you know, they're always putting the money somewhere else. So you don't have, this generational upgrade that a big for-profit company will do. They'll just do whatever they have. And our school board in the county that we're sitting in, even though people all around the world get to hear the show, we've had a pretty amazing failure to implement a new school board management system for the school board here in this case Manatee County, and
so
they're the second largest employer in the county. I think they got about 7,000 employees, and they overhauled the system because they wanted to improve from this cobbled together system that they had, efficiency. Cobbled together system that had been built up, and whoever they decided to implement has since gone bankrupt, et cetera, and other problems. But we won't take them to task so much. But anyway, you have, even if you don't have the expertise, there's a simple thing that you can do, and that is you can buy cybersecurity insurance. You don't have to have the expertise. You can buy the insurance. And, of course, the insurance company is going to come in, and they're going to want you to do some things to get the coverage, just like, you know, if you get a house or a business. I mean,
in the construction industry all the time, the factory mutual will send down engineers, and they will review everything, go over it before they insure it.
Right. And in many cases, though, once you get up to standards, if you get hacked in the ransom, you know, they don't like to make a big deal about it, but they'll just... It's just easier to pay the money. And then you say, well, you could just pay the money anyway because you're paying all this money on insurance. But you then, after you pay the money, and some of these municipal governments said, well, the FBI said, you know, they discouraged us to pay because you'd have to go in and clean out your system afterwards. Well, if you had an insurance policy, that'd be the insurance policy's problem, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's easy for the FBI to tell these places like Baltimore, et cetera, who, you know, also don't want to be known
as the company that
caved.
Yeah. They could be the ones doing it.
Into the North Korean hackers or whatever.
The deep state.
Yeah. Whoever did it. And, yeah, it's just... So now they everything just unfolds, and you got more and more work. And so I actually pitched this story just over the weekend to a local media, you know, because now that I've had one course, I'm an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like painted Holiday Inn three nights in a row.
But I was saying, wouldn't this be a great – now I'm going to pitch it to you. Wouldn't it be a great story for local media? Okay, so I could summarize it much better than I just did verbally. I could probably put it in about a 300-word preamble to a story. And then, but the meat of the story is to call, like, the city of Sarasota, the city of Bradenton, and just ask, do you have a cybersecurity insurance policy? And, you know, we would hope that everybody does. But I have my doubts. And I would feel like it would be a public service for the public to know which leadership is not bothering to ensure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because all your records are there.
Right. And in the example, now I will take him to task, the Manatee County School Board, the original estimate of the implementation, I think, was $10 million. They've already gone to $20 million. And they are having to do things manually that they didn't have to do before because the stuff doesn't work. One of the things, now I'm going to pull from, I took a database course. But I do know that this shouldn't have been a problem. So you're an employee in the system. Maybe you're a teacher, or maybe you're an administrator, or maybe you're custodial. But you build up time, and then you move into a different department. But you've accumulated credits. You know, your 401K and these different things that as you move, you shouldn't be losing your benefits. That's what I meant to say, benefits instead of credits. You shouldn't be losing your benefits as you move from one department to the other. And from a database standpoint, lucky Leonard isn't in the studio because I know he'd be rolling his eyes at me trying to explain this stuff. But, you know, your name and then all your attributes are in a table. And when you move from one database to another, you can move all those things, or normally you can move all those things at once, or just the ones you want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when someone, they discovered after they rolled it out, that when they move someone from one category, one position to another position, and they wanted to bring the benefits and the attributes with them, the system wouldn't do it. And so they would then have to manually move all that data by hand into the new table in the new place you were. So, you know.
I can't believe somebody couldn't write something for that.
Well, that's what my teacher did, because I was showing her the articles, too, about this. And she was like, I can't believe they can't do that.
Yeah. Government.
But believe me, I think if somebody could, that there's a lot of people that would not want to spend the extra $10 million and be embarrassed in front of all the media about that. So I digressed a little bit.
So what's going on with Elliott Wave? I'm seeing Elliott Wave here on the thing.
All right. Well, we have to do this appropriately before we start the news segment of the show. I mean, this is all about production.
I tell you, I've got news for you.
Okay, that's enough of Greg Allman this week.
I like Greg.
In a note to customers, Goldman Sachs gave a bullish forecast for Bitcoin price. They even shared it on Twitter just yesterday. The note suggests a short-term target of 13,971. The target is based on Elliott Wave theory, which forecast market trends. We hear about, if you listen to Talking Markets, you're going to hear about Elliott Waves.
So yeah, actually, Mark just did he did Fibonacci, but we did a webinar on Elliott Waves.
Fibonacci and Elliott friends?
Yeah. You use them together. Yeah, they're like best friends.
Ah. According to the analysts, Bitcoin will rebound. Okay, so I'm going to, you're just now seeing these numbers. I'm going to ask you how these numbers compare with what you're telling your clients at Talking Markets and SeekingCryptos.com.
I think.
Let me tell the audience.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Goldman Sachs expert says Bitcoin will rebound from support around 11,094. When I started the show, it was trading about 11,400,
okay,
leaving room for at least one leg higher towards 12,916 and 13,971. This would complete I believe the V stands for fifth wave count from July, producing a short-term top of consolidation.
I agree.
The analysts suggest that this could be the first leg of a five-wave count. So it's either the last wave of a five-wave or the first wave of a five-wave.
Yeah.
But either way, any retracement from the 12,009 to 13,900, that whenever we see that, will be another buying opportunity.
Yeah.
Although, if anything breaks down, it could go down to 9,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much standard typical.
And it also suggests a short-term top of 10,791, which we've been...
Stop.
Oh, sure. Oh.
So if you're buying here for that, then you put a stop at a 10,79, which... Yeah, 700. You 700 to make, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. Yeah, that's a good. I like that trade. Actually, we're looking at that, looking at a setup here because we have an inside candle to go long. Maybe if it looks better, there was one yesterday.
So what dollar amounts are those?
I think with the 11,094, that is the 3A2 retrace. So that I knew that because we put that out. Yes. Well, no, it needs to get lower than that. It would have to go lower than that for me to add back in. But I agree with the count. There's a third wave. We're consolidating in the fourth wave. If it takes out the high there, then I think you're going to see a retest of 14,000. I agree with their levels there.
All right.
I mean, it's pretty standard technical stuff there. But they made it sound really good.
Goldman Sachs has taken an increasing interest in the cryptocurrency market.
Well, wait, didn't their Circle just go bankrupt or something? Poloniex?
If you want something done Poloniex. Right, you got to do it yourself.
You got to do it yourself, okay.
It has gone from looking at the potential of launching its own virtual token to making hires to accelerate the program.
There we go.
Wow.
I told you, we're not going to get an ETF until Goldman Sachs is involved.
Well, come on, Goldman.
Come on, Goldman.
And Sachs.
And Sachs.
don't let one of
them. They run
the
world. I mean, look at all the, you know, Draghi, Steve Mnuchin, the head of the England's central bank. They're all former Goldman Sachs. And even Jim Cramer's former Goldman Sachs. So you just have everything. Everything's Goldman Sachs.
Back around 2007, the website hasn't been kept up since then. But there was this great website called theyrule.net, and it wasn't a conspiracy theory website. It was just a basic bare bones fact, and it was you would come on a screen. It was interactive, and there would just be tables like a board table, and you would type in where you wanted to start, like Morgan Stanley,
mm-hmm.
and you'd label that, and you'd click on the board, and then all the chairs would pop up. And it was when it was up to date, it would be all the people on the board of Morgan Stanley and their names. And then you would click on the name of one of the board members, and like a spider web, you'd see all the other boards that person was on. So especially Morgan Stanley, like if you clicked all of them, which I had done, and I played a lot on this website. So you picture one table.
So what do you do at night, Harry?
I don't do that anymore because they haven't kept it up. So this is almost just 12 years ago, but it was kept up for a while. It was always interesting. And so let's just say you got Morgan Stanley and you get, because they had a pretty big board. They had about 15 people. So, and you'd click on one, and then that person would be on Lockheed Martin and Bank of America and Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
And then you click on this lady down here, and she's on United Technologies and United Healthcare. And so now you've got one layer out of all these other boards. And then you click on those, and all the same thing happens all over again, I have to say. By the time you get to the third table, you know, clicking out, you had this huge interlocking spider web of people and their names, probably, you know, 1,000 people, maybe even 3,000 people, but even that's a small number. And you had the top. You know, by the time you click out on all those, you have almost the top 100 companies in the United States. And you have, so it's not like, I'm not pitching a conspiracy theory thing here.
It's just
but
the way it is.
It's like groupthink.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying, oh, well, what about such and such? And, you know, after the board meeting, and I know what you think about some politician. You know what I think.
I think there's a dark... Well, you know, it was, deep state. And I think you mentioned it was when Reagan got elected about the...
Oh, let's not tell that story.
Okay. That was a good one. I like that one. I tell it all the time.
Not tell that one. anyway, but it is. You think it's just like at the country club or the local community. You know, you could...
Oh, yeah.
You know, they could all be independent business people. But if something's happening around town most of them don't like, they're going to be in each other's ear.
Yeah.
And they'll be setting the traps for it before it ever happens. Speaking of setting traps, the People's Bank of China, I don't really have a connection there, has claimed that its digital currency can now be said to be ready. The deputy director, Mu Chang Chun, he's not the prototype, says there's a prototype that adopts blockchain architecture, has been successfully developed after 5 years of research.
Wow.
Quite a while.
They could have just copied Ripple.
Well, they can't allow... If they let Ripple in, they wouldn't have been able to develop their own intellectual property. So I'm sure there's nothing like Ripple in this blockchain
that they're doing with.
Anyway, Mu said issuing a digital currency using pure blockchain would be difficult to achieve in a country as big as China because retailers require high concurrency performance. So that's why they're doing a two-tier operating system to cater to the nation's complex economy with vast territorial and a large population. What superpower isn't? Anyway, according to Mu, there'll be an upper level and commercial banks on a secondary level. The upper level will be the People's Bank of China, and the secondary level will be the commercial bank. So I don't see how it's getting into a real complex organization yet. Anyway, this is going to improve the accessibility. It's going to make everything wonderful. And according to Mu, as in Mu Chang Chun, I don't even know if I said that from memory correctly.
You did.
it will be also be suitable for small-scale, high-retail frequency business scenarios. So, big day in China coming out there. And not to be outdone, it was only natural that this next story would follow. The United States Federal Reserve Board is planning to release a real-time payments and settlement service in order to boost the payments infrastructure in the country. Now, I don't know all that much about China, so to break down the People's Bank of China and its organization with the commercial banks. I know you do, but...
Mm-hmm.
I can break down this U.S. story a little bit. And so, in order to boost the payments infrastructure in the country...
Well, I think there's this theory that if the next recession... Because the last one, you had all that $7 trillion that went out and was supposed to be for shovel-ready jobs and all this. And it went all to the banks, and it went to the wealthy people, and it never trickled down. And I think what they're saying here, well, if we put... $1,000 in everybody's pocket.
I think you're way ahead of that. This is a much more basic thing.
I thought that's what it was.
No, they've talked about that.
Oh, okay.
Jerome Powell has talked about that would be a good thing. But no, this is something as cutting edge as MasterCard or Visa.
Oh, wow.
The Board of Governors of this system has requested that the Federal Reserve Bank develop a new interbank real-time settlement service to support faster payments in the U.S. To be launched. By the way, it's got the catchy name of FedNow.
FedNow?
Yeah, FedNow. Here comes that money.
It's like MoneyGram.
Anyway, FedNow should be ready by 2023
It'll
or 2024.
It'll be in every Walmart. It'll be in every Walmart.
Anyway, they aim to modernize the country's payment system with a real-time service that can transfer funds around the clock and on weekends and weekdays. Like I said, MasterCard and Visa.
Yeah.
Or MoneyGram.
Or PayPal.
The service will, or Bitcoin.
Or, you know, Zelle.
The service will purportedly be available to both business and the general public. So I guess what they're talking about, this isn't the Fed coin that we were looking for to do what you were talking about. It's, you know, to be like the Fed's version of Libra, which has...
I don't even know what good that's going to do. I mean, we already have all that.
Well,
what's the purpose?
So you make a payment. Let's say you had a restaurant down the street. Somebody pays you, and you deposit it into the bank.
It's automatic
and
now.
Then you pay somebody for whatever.
It's all automatic now.
Yeah.
I don't see how any of that's going to...
Well, that's why we cover these important topics here.
I mean, they just need to cut some rates here. Let's just get some Federal Reserve interest rate cuts so Bitcoin will go up, gold will go up.
That government talk was setting us up for the meat and potatoes story here that we'll get to on the other side of the break, which is we sort of have some guidance for your tax returns, for your crypto tax returns from the IRS, or do we? But we'll try and make as much sense of it as we can. By the way, if you don't believe us, we will have Joshua Sands back next week. To talk more about that. Anyway, you're listening to the Henry Raines. show. We'll be back right after this. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Byte Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Byte Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Byte Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Byte Federal ATM near you. Go to ByteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's ByteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rain Show. Henry Rain Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM in the studio with Andy, a.k.a. Andrew from Talking Markets, Mark and Andrew. And last week we talked about the 10,000 letters the IRS had sent out to people that they knew had done cryptocurrency trading or believed they had done cryptocurrency trading, and well, just gave them a heads up. We're watching you. We're looking at those returns. So after you get a letter like that, you're like, well,
what do I do?
Yeah, what do I do? What kind of, I don't get much guidance. Well, actually, there was a little bit of guidance in there. Earlier, its first guidance was in 2014. That would be IRS's first guidance about cryptocurrency. IRS Commissioner Charles Reddick said at the end of May that that guidance would come within the next 30 days. Excuse me, that's the updated guidance from the letter. So the letter, the current IRS Commissioner is Charles. He's got the new stuff coming, the guidance. It's practically done. It'll be here by the end of May. Well, it isn't here yet.
No.
So people are now scrambling.
Efficient government.
So back in 2014, the original time, now, this was such a simple time back in 2014 in the good old days. The traders didn't have to know the exact date and time. The new letters say tell traders to look at the exact date and time that they conducted a transaction. Now, when we talked about this the last couple tax, have we had two tax seasons yet on this show?
Yes, we have.
Yes. Well, we always took it for granted that you were, it was at the moment, because like when you do your TD Ameritrade or whatever stock broker you use, you when you get their report, it's the price that you paid.
Yeah.
Well, in the simple days of 2014,
it wasn't that simple.
No, it could have been the morning, the afternoon, the closing, whenever the exchange closed. Of course, they never closed. You just had to be consistent.
Oh, there you go.
And so you might have picked a price that was conducive to you. You might have picked a high price from the morning to raise your cost basis. You could have picked a low price for your sale. And, of course, people would just had to be consistent. I'm sure they make their decisions by how they were consistent. So, anyway, the new guidance, at least from this letter, which isn't official guidance, it's just letter guidance, is you need to know the date and time. So now people who I guess never cared about trying to thinking that they would ever have to
pay taxes,
like, how do we know? Well, obviously you haven't been looking the last couple of years, because if you really simply want to know as far as Bitcoin dollar, you know, Kraken Coinbase will tell you what you paid for it when you buy. You get a little PDF printout or an Excel printout. Now, if you're going back from exchange, you know, doing Ethereum to Bitcoin to Litecoin to Verge, and
oh my God,
then you just zero out everything as a total loss.
Yeah,
that's really the simplest thing. Totally tongue in cheek. Just find some coin that doesn't exist anymore, buy it in a peer to peer.
There you go. That's what I had. Yeah.
Anyway. The IRS has previously asked exchanges, now this is on the exchange side, to generate 1099-K forms for customers, which are usually used for payment settlement organizations. That's one. It says here that's usually merchants receiving revenue through a particular income stream. So like, you're familiar with being an entrepreneur. And so you have a a customer that pays you a lot, or maybe like I'm familiar with, like a doctor, the insurance company has paid you repeatedly over the course of the year. You get a 1099 at the end of the year. Is that the K form?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not what you're supposed to use anymore for your crypto. It says now the IRS is essentially saying the correct form is actually the 1099B. Do you know what that one is?
I have no idea.
No. According to Ryan, one of the schedules listed in one of the letters is Schedule D, which is referring for gains and losses from capital assets, which I've got a little familiarity with.
Yeah.
But usually it prints right out from the
QuickBooks.
Yeah. Or from the brokerage.
I get it from my accountant. I don't deal with any of that.
Oh, you got an accountant.
Yeah.
I got TurboTax.
You have two of them. Oh, TurboTax, yeah.
Yeah. TurboTax has lots of accountants.
Yeah,
my computer.
My taxes are so complex anymore. It's just...
Well,
they need to make it easier. How much you made. Here's how much you did. Boom, gone. You know, you got to have one for every business. You got to have this. And you got
How TurboTax goes, great, we found a deduction for you. It's called the standard deduction.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, but now they say the information needs to be listed in form 8949. I'm not going to keep going over.
No, there's a lot of forms.
Yeah,
you know.
That's why we have Joshua Sands, CryptoTax Man,
great
on the show next week, and he will sort this out. But
some questions for him too.
Yeah, well, and the point is, we're getting this started early. He's coming every month. You can get your questions ready. Let us know one way or the other what you want us to ask, or contact him directly, and you get all that too. But I think, boy, between cybersecurity public service at the beginning of this show and tax return public service, we should be getting the Presidential Medal of Honor, Freedom, or whatever they call it, from President Trump. And I'll go to the White House.
There you go.
I don't care.
I don't mind. I have a couple beers.
Yeah. I'll be looking at Melania, but...
He is a lucky man.
Well, just to make sure... Because she knows what he's going to do. And when he's behind me,
yeah,
putting something around my neck, I'll go to the White House, but I can't say I'm totally at ease.
You just don't want Biden behind you.
Yeah, there was... I can't even begin to talk about the story that was I was reading before we came here. And anyway, let me get back to things of relevance to this, which... would be the cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase. But I'm going to digress again. Remember when Broadcom got prevented from buying Qualcomm for national security?
Yes.
This ties into cybersecurity, folks. But they just closed the deal on Symantec. So if we're worried about them as a security threat, cybersecurity, why do we let them buy one of our biggest cybersecurity companies? Now we've got to rely on the remnants of John McAfee's company?
No, they could have gone after Kaspersky.
Or they? Well, the Russians know better than to sell their company.
Yeah. You know.
Well, we still got the guy on CNBC with the 800 number, whatever that thing for your computer is that will keep you safe. I wonder if he sells municipal cybersecurity ransomware insurance. Well, one party that you don't have to worry about, cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase.
Well, talk about party. What happened to Sun and Buffett?
Well, I would like to know what happened to the donation if it actually came through. I saw the declarations from the Chinese company, Justin Sun's company, that they donated, and I saw the arrangements go forward, but I haven't seen a photo op with any of the charity people with their multi-million dollar donation. Boy, and now I wonder if they just called the second runner up and you still got that $4 million?
Yeah, you're 3.5.
You haven't spent that yet, have you?
No.
Well, speaking of, do you still have those millions? Cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase has described how it was targeted by and foiled, quote, a sophisticated, highly targeted, thought-out attack. And I'm just thinking about how I can't pronounce stuff, but I'm wondering why people write it. It was targeted by a highly targeted attack.
Yeah.
That's some reporting there. Aimed to access its systems and presumably make off with billions of dollars worth of cryptocurrency. They said the hackers used a combination of means to try and hoodwink staff and access vital systems. Methods that included spear phishing, social engineering, and browser zero-day exploits. Okay, so...
I don't know any of that stuff.
Oh.
What's spear phishing?
Now I feel like I'm on the certification test.
There we go.
Well, phishing is like when they just send you...
Emails.
Spear phishing is more targeted, and I'm going to say it like I'm right. This is like one of those pick A, B, C, D,
yes.
And you go, well, it sounds like I'll go with C, and most, but, you know, you're usually right.
Yeah.
Spear phishing is when they know something about you, and they tailor the attempt
email
to get you, suck you into. And we actually, in one of my labs, we didn't actually do it, but they created, like, fake social media profiles of people and made it look like Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And they would ask questions. How would you, you know, I don't want to overdo this, but, you know, it was like, okay, so they're at the wedding. You tell the person in network security, were you at Joe's wedding? Oh, did you see Sue there? And that was just from looking at pictures on Twitter. Or you would look at other interests of theirs, and then you would look for coworkers in the pictures and work your attack that
way.
Thank
God Facebook identifies you in every picture that's out there.
Yeah. And in fact, later in the course, they actually, one of the labs is you download hacking tools to hack passwords, which are readily available for free. And luckily, I was so far behind by that time of the semester, I was just like,
yeah.
So I don't know how to hack passwords. Really, but I know how to go back and look up the place to go find out how to hack passwords. All right, social engineering is, similar to that. The spear phishing is targeted to get you to do something. The social engineering, it would be more like, Andy, I got to get to the airport. I really need my password right now. And, you know, or do I have to call the boss? That's social engineering right there. And then finally, browser zero-day exploits. That has a lot to do with the previous topic. When we talk about all these network systems that are cobbled together, whenever a new system's rolled out, they know they're rolling it out with security, insecurity, with places that it can be attacked, and because they don't, they can't really test those places. You don't know you're unknown. So you wait and roll it out and see where those initial attacks come, or you have white hat hackers trying to see if they can get in, and then you send the updates. Well, if you have a sophisticated client, they do the updates. But you got three different systems, and if I update this one, it's going to cause the system over there to collapse and won't work, so it can't be that important. We just won't update it. We've got to get the budget in, and I'll have to get people off their computer to do the updates, and then the update never gets done. So a zero-day exploit is coming in when it's at its weakest.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the attack started on May 30th with a dozen staff being sent emails purported to be from Gregory Harris, a research grants administrator. So, hey, he's got money.
Yeah.
At the University of Cambridge, and far from random, these cited the employees' past histories and requested help with judging projects competing for an award. So the spear phishing there, they know something about you. They're appealing to your vanity because we know you've got the kind of qualifications to help us judge for Cambridge.
Yeah.
Cambridge in the UK, that's a big deal. Plus, the email came from a legitimate Cambridge domain. Now, that's the part that got me, because I wonder how they got the use of the domain, which implies to me something inside. Now,
it's like getting a phone call from your own self. Have you seen that?
No.
It's a new thing that I guess they can make it look like. All of a sudden, I looked down on my phone. It was about 2 weeks ago, and it was myself calling me, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And they can actually go on there and disguise
their... yourself messages?
I blocked myself.
I was trying to think about that because, you know, you're going to have different departments that have, you know, free emails that they could assign to people as they come into the department. But it still seems to me like you've got to have, unless you've hacked into Cambridge, and then you, as an outsider, have control, otherwise you'd have to have an inside element to this. The email coming from the legitimate domain had no malicious elements past the spam detection, again, referenced the background of the recipients, and then they continued to correspond. So over the next couple of weeks, similar emails were received. They corresponded back and forth. You know, it's practically best friends.
Yeah.
They had conversations with several staffers and holding back from sending any malicious code until June 17th. So from May 30th to June 17th, they were just laying the groundwork. But you got billions and billions. You know, this isn't like send the Nigerian princess your bank account.
Yeah.
We're on to something big here. So then they sent another email containing a URL that opened in Firefox, would install the malware capable of someone's machines. And then they said Coinbase found this and blocked the attack. But even though they blocked that, it was interesting how they presented the Firefox link. Because it first identified the operating system of the browser of the victim, displayed a convincing error to the Mac operating system users who were not using the Firefox browser, prompting them to install the latest version of the app. So here you have this person on a Mac that was corresponding for 2 weeks. They are getting to be a judge with real money awarded in Cambridge, raising their elevation beyond this stupid little Coinbase cubicle. So I am now somebody with some clout in Cambridge, and I can't open the Firefox. Let me just download this thing.
Yeah.
Firefox?
Yeah.
I mean, Firefox, everybody. They're a security unto themselves, practically. Yeah. Once email the URL was visited with Firefox, the exploit code was delivered from a different domain that had been registered on May 28th, and based on a report from an employee on an alert, Coinbase found out some more. Coinbase explained that there had been two separate Firefox zero-day exploits utilized in the attack. One allowed an attacker to escalate privileges from JavaScript on a page to a browser. Don't ask me to explain that. And one that allowed the attacker to escape the browser sandbox and execute code on the host computer. So anyway, besides all the prep they did with the victims, they also knew about the Firefox weaknesses and played the social engineering to get it on. And, you know, I guess we should be happy that they didn't, although Lloyd's of London
is probably really happy.
We're really happy.
Yeah.
We don't know when the attackers first gained access to the Cambridge accounts or whether the accounts were taken over or created. As others have noted, the identities associated with email accounts have no online presence, and the LinkedIn profiles are almost certain. So they even created LinkedIn profiles, so when you went to Google this person that you were conversing with, you had something.
I'm extremely cautious. I don't answer emails. Sometimes people go, I sent you something. I'm like, oh, I probably deleted it.
You know, having taken this class, and again, I'm just like the little ant at the bottom of the rotten banana tree, trying to get a crumb of knowledge. And what I do know is how much I don't know and how much every single thing is hackable and able to get into. We actually have a little bit of blockchain news here, just to round this out before we have to say goodbye. We're actually almost on time here. The 13th largest sovereign fund, Abu Dhabi based, is investing in a cryptocurrency exchange.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that's the sovereign fund. There's already two cryptocurrency exchanges operating in United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi, that are operating in the International Financial Center and Free Zone, Abu Dhabi Global Market, which is their regulating body for that. And so there's at least two there. The IBM is in the news on a couple of things. This one was sort of unusual to me. They filed a patent for a blockchain-enabled web browser patent. And according to the application, the system that stores the web browser events on a blockchain. The browser described in the filing collects information during web browsing session and transfers it to peers and peer-to-peer network for on-chain storage of the in-browser events. Okay, so I get the part that you can store things on the blockchain. And, you know, it's a peer-to-peer network, so it's like a permissionless network. But if it's storing there, it says you're going to be, and it's going to include visited website, bookmarks, search terms, cookies, geolocation, and a record of browser security patches, among others. So, supposedly I can clear my browser cookies and my browser history, but if it's on the blockchain, it's there forever.
Yeah.
So I have to rely on IBM that this is going to give you a system for storing browsing information such that privacy is preserved and places privacy in the hands of a user rather than a third party.
Oh, so it's just giving you the anonymous.
So, like, I'm going to have a private key?
Yes, I don't know. I have to get Leonard in here to explain that.
Yeah. Now I realize why we're on time. I had audio from Anthony Pompliano and Kevin O'Leary from CNBC talking about Bitcoin, whether it's going to be a hedge for China. But we talked about this much more interesting stuff. Anyway, India.
I remember Kevin O'Leary, when they hit $1,000, he goes, I'd short Bitcoin if I could.
Well, we got enough. We'll get to some of this here. Because this blockchain news is just somebody inventing something else. Go and see if I got the clip here. Didn't I save it? Oh, I better know where it is. And no, I don't. All right. So it's just us.
All right.
Anyway, Kevin O'Leary is, you know, saying, you know, he's full of crap, basically. Pompliano, he's Morgan Creek Digital Assets, mucky muck there. And Kevin O'Leary asks him how much of his portfolio is in Bitcoin, and he says 50%. And he goes, you're crazy. You should be ashamed of yourself. I teach this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he
bought $200 worth of cryptocurrencies, and it's worth like $30 or something. I'm thinking to myself, he must have bought Tron.
He probably bought the Coinbase index.
Maybe.
Yeah. But Pompliano goes, well, how much do you have in stocks? Have your portfolios in stocks? And he goes, well, one company no more than 5%. One sector no more than 20%. I would have liked to see a better defense of Bitcoin, especially when he gave him the opening saying, oh, look, I bought this $200 as an example, and now it's 30, this Ripple and Ethereum, and I don't even know if Ripple's in there. But he should have said something. There's a lot of things you could say. You could have, like, the dollar and the Zimbabwe dollar.
Yeah.
You know, your average will go down, but your dollar is still good. How's your Bitcoin in there compared to where you bought it?
Yeah.
Look
at the euro. The euro's been decimated. You know, that's trading at an all-time high compared with gold. The euro gold is at the 2012 gold high. That's how depreciated the euro has become.
Oh, so gold will get you more euros.
Yes, I remember a couple of years ago, guy, one of the hedge funds goes, oh, what we're doing is we're buying gold in euros. And I was like, well, why don't you buy it in USDs? And now I understand why. They've taken the money they had in euro in Europe, and they were buying gold with it. You know, it's at an all-time high.
Well, thanks to Andrew. Augie will be in the studio next week, I imagine. And tune in next Monday, 4:05 p.m., for Talking Markets, and followed up by the Henry Rain Show.
My wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire.